Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the show. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved, and its host and founder is a marvelous woman named Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick the program off right now with Carol Marx in conversation with Jonathan Haidt. He's the Thomas Cooley Professor of Ethical Leadership at New York University's Stern School of Business. He's going to discuss his new book with Carol. It's titled The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, published by Vintage Books.
Now, you've always been interested in moral psychology. What is moral psychology, and how do our emotions drive our reasoning? And does that result in most people using kind of our gut instinct rather than reasoning and making their decisions?
Well, moral psychology is the psychology of human moral nature. And, you know, in psychology, we sort of divide up human life, and maybe one person's an expert on sexuality, maybe one person's an expert on language. I picked morality as my topic. And when I began graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania, everybody at the time was studying moral reasoning. Why do some people cheat? Why do some people hurt other people? Well, there must be something wrong with their reasoning. And I just didn't buy it. I had grown up with two sisters, very close to me in age, and we fought every day, 12 times a day, and it was all very passionate stuff, and we used our reasoning, but we used it like lawyers. We used it to defend ourselves, to attack each other. We didn't really care what was true. We just wanted to get the most candy we could get. So when I was in graduate school, I began looking much more carefully at the moral emotions. And what I found is that emotions drive our reasoning. Now, this is not a new discovery. The philosopher David Hume said this in the 18th century. He said, reason is and ought only to be the slave of the passions and can never pretend to any other office than to serve and obey them. And I think that principle helps us understand all the ridiculous reasoning coming out of Washington or coming out of anybody that you disagree with.
And you looked at the moral issues using some very interesting, it was a very interesting metaphor involving the taste receptors on our tongue to illustrate the different issues that liberals and social conservatives care about. And I thought it was fascinating. So what are the different moral receptors on our tongue?
Right. So when I was in graduate school, I was trying to understand, why does morality vary across countries? Why is morality so different in India, in rural India? I did a little bit of field work in eastern India. Why is it so different in different populations? Yet at the same time, you find people all over the world caring not just about fairness, but also about food and food taboos and sexual taboos. And the best analogy I found was thinking about our sense of taste. So we all have the same five taste buds on our tongue: sweet, sour, salt, bitter, and MSG, actually, sort of a meaty, savory taste. Yet, every culture creates its own cuisine. And so Indian food is different from Mexican food, is different from food in the American Midwest. They use different spices. They rely differently on the different taste buds. And I've found that it's the same story for morality. So my colleagues and I believe that the best candidates for being the taste buds, the moral taste buds, are issues of care and harm and nurturance, that's one. Issues of fairness and reciprocity and cheating, that's two. Issues of group loyalty versus betrayal is three. Issues of liberty and oppression is four. Issues of authority versus subversion is five. And issues of sanctity and purity versus degradation is six. And what we found, we have a research site. Listeners can go to yourmorals.org, and if you register there, you can take some surveys. We give you very good feedback, show you exactly what your scores are. And what we found at that site is that people say that they're politically liberal tend to get very high scores on care and fairness and liberty, but they really kind of reject, or they don't value issues of group loyalty, respect for authority, and purity or sanctity. conservatives, social conservatives, in contrast, value all six roughly equally. And that sets us up for understanding the culture war on almost every issue, whether it be gay rights or an amendment to protect the American flag. Conservatives see moral properties that liberals just don't see. You know, liberals say, well, it's just a piece of cloth. Why do we need to to amend the Constitution? Or when two men have sex, how does that possibly undermine other people's marriages? So we get a lot of just misunderstanding across the political divide.
So getting down to the nitty-gritty of it all, why do you say liberals and conservatives are like yin and yang, and is there any hope there?
So I began my life as a sort of a standard liberal. I grew up in Scarsdale, New York, a suburb of New York City. I'm Jewish. I went to an Ivy League school. Everybody around me was politically liberal. Everybody loved Roosevelt. Everybody hated Reagan. And I thought that conservatives were idiots and racists who just wanted low taxes because they didn't like welfare or something like that. And that's the world I was in for many years. But because I was trying to study morality and see, trying to really get inside the head of everybody and look at, see how the world looked to them, what I found is that each side is really wise about certain kinds of threats and is blind to others. So right now, one of the biggest problems we face is this rising inequality. Everybody's working harder, but all the gains go to the top 1%, and there's really something wrong with that, not just morally wrong, but it undercuts the work ethic. It makes us a weaker country. And liberals are really upset about it. They're trying to do something about it, and conservatives just don't see it. Same for global warming. Liberals see it. Conservatives just don't see it. But conversely, conservatives see a number of threats that liberals don't see. One of the biggest is the decline of marriage. We're almost at the point where half of American kids are not going to live their life, their childhood, with two parents. They're going to experience divorce, or they were born out of wedlock to begin with. We're actually in 10, 20 years, most kids will be born out of wedlock. And liberals say, well, lots of family structures are fine. Who cares? We don't want to judge anyone. But it turns out that marriage is really, really good for kids, not just economically, but in terms of giving them a structured, ordered environment where they can learn self-control. Now, conservatives have been screaming about that since the 60s, and liberals have not heard it. And it turns out declining marriage is one of the big causes of rising inequality, because if your parents aren't married, your dad's going to take off at some point. You're going to be raised much poorer than you otherwise would. You're not going to have every advantage. You're not going to rise into the top 5 or 10%. So, what I've found is that we really need to listen to both sides. Each side sees threats the other doesn't. Each side values some virtues that the other doesn't fully respect.
Well, here's my important question, Jonathan. Do you have any practical suggestions for a way to help alleviate these inbred really biases that our legislators have and their tendency to appeal primarily to their base because it's easier? Do you think that these fixes are going to have to be institutional and not individual?
Yes, absolutely. The problem is not that bad people are going to Washington. Our congressmen and senators are generally hardworking people. They're generally very intelligent, and they generally want to solve problems. They didn't go there just to make money, although that is a problem, but they went there to fix problems, and then they're all frustrated because they can't do it. They can't get anything done. So the game is broken. It's not that the players are bad people. It's the game is completely broken. And there are a number of very simple fixes. I would urge listeners to go to nolabels.org. That, I think, is the best organization in terms of proposing some very simple fixes. We all know that we need campaign finance reform. We need to stop gerrymandering of our congressional districts. But those changes, that's going to take 10 or 20 years to get those done. And they might never be doable because of the Supreme Court. No Labels says, all right, we can't wait 10 or 20 years. We need to do some things tomorrow, today, things that will make it easier for Congress to work. So things like changing the legislative calendar so that they actually have to stay in Washington during the week, and then they meet each other. That used to happen until the 1990s. Newt Gingrich changed the calendar so that now congressmen, they do all their work from Tuesday afternoon through Thursday morning. They don't live in Washington. They don't know each other. They don't go to parties together. Their spouses don't come to Washington. So we've asked our politicians to basically do politics without personal relationships, and that can't be done. It's just gridlock. They hate each other.
Jonathan Haidt, in conversation with Karl Marx. His book is titled The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, published by Vintage Books. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation now with Justin Yop. Dr. Justin Yop, he's a PhD, he's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he's one of the founders of a website, singlefathersdue2cancer.org, a support group for single fathers whose spouses died of cancer.
When I first saw that we were going to do this interview, it hit home kind of hard because I recently had a good friend whose wife died of cancer, leaving her husband a widower with two children. And, you know, we certainly think in our hearts and in our brains and in our hearts a lot about the people who suffer from cancer, but often we don't think about the widowers in particular, and this is very, very timely. What prompted you to start this group?
Well, this started about 3 years ago when my colleagues and I here at the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, we worked with several families with young mothers who had terminal cancer, and it became increasingly clear to us that what was most important to them was how their children and how their husbands would do after their deaths. And so after they did die, we looked around to see what was available for these fathers to kind of help them with their coping through this time. And we soon realized that there was nothing locally, and after that we realized there was nothing anywhere, and discovered this had really been an overlooked population, both in terms of what's offered clinically and what's been looked at then from a research standpoint. And so from that, we started a support group locally here in Chapel Hill that we continue to run. And we've blossomed from that into we now have a website, singlefathersduetocancer.org, that we put a lot of time and investment into that we hope will be a resource for fathers out there who have lost their wives or partners to cancer and have children at the home. And now we're collecting some research data with the hope that we can learn more about their experiences and how to help them.
Yeah, it's a terrific website. I've gone on there and very, very well organized and very user-friendly. Do you think maybe one of the reasons that there wasn't much out there before you got involved with this, is there perhaps something to that stereotype of men just, we keep our feelings inside, we don't reach out, we don't talk about it, and therefore, you know, maybe we miss out on some really important help and assistance?
Yeah, so whether or not, you know, that stereotype is true, it's definitely the stereotype. And I think that it it prohibits people from maybe reaching out to men and maybe the vice versa. It prohibits men or inhibits men from reaching out to others for support. And that's something that the fathers in our group have said, is that a couple of them went to, you know, more typical grief support groups and found that those groups were populated by older people and by mostly women. And while they were helpful in some way, they felt like their experiences were different enough that they didn't quite feel at home in those support groups. And so there really is, you know, and that's certainly true in the literature, is that, you know, us guys don't reach out quite as easily, and that's something that may not be helpful for the kids moving on. So, you know, really our work in working with these dads is, it's certainly to help them, but then, you know, the end game is to help their children. And so, you know, reaching out to a population or making, you know, having a support group or a website for, you know, maybe a group of guys who wouldn't otherwise access that, we hope are either breaking down those barriers or at least giving them an avenue to access some support.
How is the experience of a widower different from the widow?
You know, that's a good question, and it's not, the research on that is mixed, but I think that, you know, one way, as we're just talking about, one way that it's clearly different is, and this has been shown in the research, is that, you know, guys don't reach out for that support. They don't accept that kind of support from others, whether it's friends or family or through therapy or pastoral care. There's, you know, on the whole, there's more of a tendency to kind of close ranks and to not reach out and to kind of shelter in a little bit. And that's, you know, certainly that's on the whole, and that's not true of every dad, but you know, going through this is tremendously hard enough as it is, and to try and go through it alone makes it that much harder. So I think that's certainly one way in which men and women grieve differently.
You know, you were talking about the effects on the children, and as I looked on the website and in other places, I guess it wasn't surprising to learn that a child's future mental health is very much tied into the mental health of that
Yep.
surviving parent.
Yeah, yeah, that's entirely true. You know, certainly, you know, you children come into this time with, you know, pre-existing factors, whether that's you know, SES or any previous mental health history. But from the time of the death of a parent moving forward, certainly, you know, the biggest factor that shapes their adaptation moving forward is the coping of the surviving parent. And so really that's one thing that we are very aware of and very cognizant of, is that the best way that we know how to help these kids is to help their surviving parents. And considering that dads are less likely to reach out for that kind of support, we really want to reach them, you know, particularly so.
Now, why did you form your group specifically as to cancer, singlefathersduetocancer.org?
Well, that's a good question. So we, you know, my colleague and I, Dr. Don Rosenstein, we are housed here in the North Carolina Cancer Hospital. So our mission is cancer specific. So that was the impetus for us making it just to cancer, and to having the website just for cancer. But whether or not there's any differences in death due to cancer or death due to other illnesses or sudden death is certainly an open question. And by our restricting this just to cancer is not to imply that that is, you know, more strenuous or wholly different in some way. It's really just a product of what our mission is here at the hospital. But if you look at it from the other standpoint, kind of before death, cancer probably is unique or almost unique in that it's one of the few causes of death where it can often be anticipated for months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly, you know, death in a car accident or a sudden heart attack or stroke, you know, kind of spring up suddenly. This one you can, you know, as one of our fathers said, they could see the train coming. And
yeah.
So it really allows for some work prior to death that is a lot easier to talk about in theory and a lot easier to kind of discuss what families could or should do than it is to do in practice, especially when you have a young mom who's dying.
What was the response to you starting the support group, and were you surprised at it?
You know, the response has been great. That's a good question. I would say maybe I bought into the stereotype a little bit as well, and I was maybe a little bit surprised initially at how you know, how amazing these dads are and how open they are in discussing their thoughts and feelings and their willingness to, you know, lean on each other and kind of you know, share their struggles and embrace each other's successes. But that surprise for me wore off pretty quickly. And once I got to know these guys and got to know them in this group format, they're pretty amazing. You know, they come in this group and, you know, we order pizza or subs for them and we put it on the table and we don't even have an agenda or anything. We just start talking and
interesting.
And we usually have to wrap it up. You know, we usually run late. And that wasn't how we started this. We started this with the idea that we were going to do a 7-session group and that Dr. Rosenstein and I were going to come in with a certain agenda and kind of give a didactic presentation for the first 30 minutes and then we'd have time for group discussion. Well, that plan was thrown out by the end of our first meeting when we realized that these guys really had more to say to each other and more to hear from each other than we had to tell them. So we kind of scrapped that and we've been going with pure discussion ever since then, and we are never lacking for pressing topics or stimulating discussion.
That's Justin Yop, Ph.D., Assistant Professor of Psychiatry at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The website is singlefathersdue2cancer.org. Steve Weisman returns later in the program. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to that point in the program where we go behind the scenes in talk radio, as our senior correspondent Kevin Casey is also the vice president and executive editor of the trade publication Talkers, which serves the talk radio industry from an insider perspective. Kevin, welcome back to the show. You know, it's funny, this week seems to be the week of scandals. You've got the ongoing Benghazi scandal in which the political opponents of the president are using it against him. You've got the IRS allegedly auditing conservative organizations such as the Tea Party as payback for perhaps some agents in the IRS not agreeing with their politics, and that's come out. And on top of all that, you have the Justice Department allegedly scrutinizing or, you know, wiretapping or peering into the private records, the phone records of the Associated Press. And that is obviously not kosher. So is this, in your opinion, as somebody who tracks these things, more scandal than usual?
I think it's more at this level than usual, and I think talk radio loves a great scandal. It's some of these issues where people just love to be indignant and say that, you know, how could this be happening? This is crazy, and it's an easy issue to be angry about.
You know what I'm concerned about? I'm concerned that we're reaching a point in our society where people are becoming numb to this, where so many outrageous things happen day after day, week after week, that it just becomes part of the background noise, and that you don't know what to think of as being something that really warrants outrage, or whether it's just fake outrage for political purposes. Now, in this case, certainly the government, you know, tapping into the private records of the press, that's very upsetting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the IRS harassing people for their political positions is outrageous. And what do you do? I mean, what do you do about a thing like that? People are terrified of the IRS.
Right.
And as far as the Benghazi thing is concerned, in wartime, and we are either at war or we're not, you either have certain standards of responsibility or you don't. And it's very hard to figure whether or not this really is criminal activity or this is just political opportunism to turn something that happens during times like this, that there are many things going on that you don't know about,
mm-hmm.
that turning it into political hay.
Right.
And that's what I think is going on. I'm not saying that's what's going on, but those are the things that we as citizens have to concern ourselves with. But it gets so noisy, you don't know what to think. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. Everything you said is true, and I think that, it's not necessarily that there's that much more going on in the world. It's amplified, as you and I discuss a lot, is just the diversification and intensity of media.
I think it's a cross between the media wanting to make good copy and the politicians wanting to, you know, cut the throats of their opponents.
Yeah.
And I think we the public, well, we're sort of media, but we're still the public, are caught between those two. Interesting indeed.
Right.
Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. Our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey. If you're interested in what's going on behind the scenes in talk radio, go to talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray continues in just a moment.
Did you know an estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined now by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation with Nia Vardalos. She's the Academy Award-nominated actress who's best known for her portrayal of Nia Portokalos in the blockbuster movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. She's going to talk to Steve about her new book titled Instant Mom, published by Harper One.
Many of you first became familiar with her with the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which was one of my all-time favorite movies. She's done a lot of acting, screenwriting, directing, producing. Actually, one of my favorite movies that she did was a romantic comedy called My Life in Ruins, which I love the story, I love the acting, and it took place in Greece, and it was beautiful. And she's joining us right now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. We had a great time making that movie in Greece. It was amazing,
and
I got
bet.
To work with Richard Dreyfuss. I asked him Jaws stories the whole time.
That must have been fun.
Yeah.
You know, I read somewhere that My Big Fat Greek Wedding actually started out as a one-woman show. Is that right?
Well, I tell the story in my book, Instant Mom, of how impossibly that movie got made. And I'll do it in five lines for you, but in the book, it's in detail. I couldn't get an agent to represent me in Los Angeles so that I could get film and TV work. And an agent said to me, you're Greek, and that is the problem. You don't fit into any of these roles. So I thought, well, if that's the problem, I'll make it the solution. And I wrote My Big Fat Greek Wedding as a screenplay. Well, then I couldn't get the screenplay read because I didn't have an uncle who ran a studio. So I jumped up on stage and did it as a one-person show, playing all the roles. Rita Wilson is Greek. She came to the show. She sent her husband, Tom Hanks, to the very next show, and they bought my screenplay and impossibly let me play the lead role. So that's how it got made. And then, 2 years later, I was nominated for an Academy Award. It's bananas.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. You know, it is funny that say, oh, the movie is too Greek, because it certainly is Greek. And some Greek friends of mine, I asked, they said, oh, yeah, it's got it nailed. But it wasn't just Greek. I think why it was so popular was everybody saw their families in there, didn't they?
Yes, that surprised me. But then I read a quote after I wrote the screenplay, after the movie was out, that said, when you go for the specific, universality comes. And that's when I realized by accident I had stumbled upon that. I thought I wrote about my family and found out, oh, you all saw your families in it. And that has happened again with my book. My book, Instant Mom, is about how we adopted our daughter, who was almost 3 years old when we met. That's the unique story. But I've been crisscrossing the country. The book is on the New York Times bestseller list. Because, again, people are seeing themselves in the story, and that surprised me. Again, I realize when I'm just honest with my writing, it seems to connect the best way.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things was, and I really wasn't familiar until I read your book, about foster care adoption. You know, I had known about adoptions, I had known about foster care, but I never put the foster care adoptions together, and it was like slapping myself in the head. How did I miss this? Tell us a little bit about how foster care adoptions work.
Yeah, that surprised me too. Really surprised me. I didn't know about this world. It works this way. There are 500,000 kids living in American foster care. 130,000 kids have been legally emancipated, which means the parental birthrights have been terminated. These kids can be adopted. The 350,000 kids need a good home. So if your kids have gone off to college and you're looking to mentor some kids and you have a spare room, this is a process for you. It's absolutely free, and these kids need a loving home. And it, of course, doesn't just apply to people who have already been parents. For us, we got matched with our daughter after 10 years of trying, and I'm really honest in the book that while I was writing My Big Fat Greek Wedding and all my subsequent films, including making your favorite, My Life in Ruins, I was trying to be a mom. Impossibly, it happened by accident. When I heard about American foster care, we met with these social workers. 9 months later, I got a call one night, and they told us there was a little girl living in American foster care, almost 3 years old, and they said the words, I've been waiting for, you've been matched. And I don't even remember laying down, but I was on my bedroom floor. My husband was working, filming late, and I said, when is she coming? And they said, tomorrow. And
how about
just
that?
Like that, yeah, I was an instant mom.
Now, what was it like the first meeting with, your daughter's name is Ilaria, is that correct?
Yes, Ilaria. It was beautiful. The first meeting was idyllic and as if the Hallmark Channel was filming it.
But you were directing.
It was, with Oprah's lighting. It was so beautiful. Everything was great. And then, of course, and I'm honest about it in the book, of course, after that, she was sleep-deprived and didn't trust us and wouldn't let us kiss her and was angry and punching and kicking and all the things that a three-year-old should do to protect themselves from two giants who she doesn't know. So I write about in the book what happened is we had care, we had help from American Foster Care. We had therapists come in, and everybody helped us transition our daughter. My mom came. My dad came over. Everyone was there. And it's so beautiful now. And again, problems could arise, but I will definitely turn to help if they do. So I thought, I'm just going to be honest in the book and say what happened and that it turned out all right. Our daughter, who, when we met, almost 3 years old, wasn't quite speaking yet, and went from a point of biting my finger so hard and not letting us kiss her, within a year was completely transitioned and tested as being ready a year earlier than she should have for public kindergarten. So I had to write about it. I had to. I felt that it was my duty and responsibility. And now we're taking the proceeds and donating back to all the adoption groups across the world that are trying to find homes for kids.
And this was actually, when you were writing this, it kind of took you back to that difficult period. Was it like reliving it? Was it hard emotionally?
Oh, it was awful. It was the worst year and a half of my life to write this book. It was really hard to rip that Band-Aid off and go back and talk about the times. I wanted to write a funny book, but I felt that that would be very disrespectful and glib and dishonest of what happened. So I told the truth. And I'm finding, I think the reason that it is on the New York Times bestseller list is because people are feeling heard. I'm finding these people at book signings across the country. I've been to approximately 15 cities at this point, and people are telling me their stories. It's really common. It's really, really common, and it's not just about birth. People are telling me their stories about losing a parent. They're seeing themselves in the book, because what I say is, you only have one chance at personal happiness. So if it's being a parent, or if it's taking that job in a country overseas, or if it's marrying somebody outside of your faith, you got to do it if that's what makes you happy.
And you mentioned before, you know, so many people when they do adoptions from China, there are the issues with Russia or even here, it's such a long and difficult process. But there are many children who are in the foster care system, who are available for adoptions and in a much more expedited manner. Isn't that right?
It's surprising, actually, that it does work sometimes quite quickly to adopt from American foster care. And then for other people, it works quite quickly to adopt from China. And I almost went zen about it in that I think you get matched with the child that you are supposed to be the parent of. And I know that sounds a little bit crunchy granola, perhaps, for our listeners out there, but I've seen it time and time again that people easily adopted from Russia, whereas for me it didn't work, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
What worked for me is I met my real daughter, so I am grateful for all the processes that didn't work for me because it led me to her. And that's why I have 25 pages of how to adopt at the back of the book, how to adopt from all over the world, because you might feel your child is in India. Well, I'm going to tell you how to find that child.
That's great. Yeah, I guess, again, the key thing that we want to make people understand is the book, Instant Mom, it's a great read, but you also provide, as you indicated, some great advice on what people can do and the kind of support they can get looking for adoption. Nia Vardalos, thank you so much for being with us, and by the way, happy Mother's Day coming up.
Oh, thank you so much. And as a final note, I just want to tell you about the fun video series we did with Vaseline Spray and Go Moisturizer, because we've partnered together to get the word out about my book, and they let me make these fun video series with these women. They're on maxthemorning.com. Really fun trading tips, and it's about what I'm talking about, the network of women and men who just come together and trade information. Pretty fun.
That's Nia Vardalos, the actress, in conversation with Steve Wiseman, and she's also an author, and her book is called Instant Mom, published by Harper One. And if you want more information, go to maxthemorning.com. It's maxthemorning.com. Steve Wiseman returns for some final words. He's going to talk about a pension advice scam. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney, he is a prolific author, and he's an expert on just about everything, and he's one of the nation's leading experts on scams, which is a national epidemic. He has the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, that he's written, published by Prentice Hall. He has a website called scamaside.com, which you should visit for the scam of the day. And unfortunately, there's a new one every day. And it gives you, of course, what to watch out for and the remedies. Steve's joining us right now to talk about a pension advance scam. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, if Charles Dickens was around today, he might say, these are the times that try men's wallets, and women's purses for that matter. You know, if you're a retiree, you're living on a pension, money is tight, you're looking for money, a way to convert the pension money you're going to be getting in the future to money today sounds kind of interesting. They call these pension advances. They're not good. They're having devastating financial consequences for a number of older Americans, and it's threatening their retirement, putting them further into debt. You know, people are dependent upon these pensions, and there are these scammers out there who are skirting the law, and there aren't really enough pieces of legislation against it to really protect people, although an effort is being made. There are a lot of people who, in particular, are being targeted, and this is veterans, teachers, firefighters, police officers. You know, these are the people in particular who have good pensions, and they're being aggressively courted by these companies over the web or in ads in the newspaper. Convert your pension into cash. And what happens is, When you look at it, and I'm always saying how there's nothing fine in fine print, you'll find that it will talk about this not as a loan. Oh, no. Because then it would come under various kinds of legislation and regulations. However, it is a loan. It's not an advance, as they call it. And when you start looking at the amounts that it costs someone, you factor in the various fees. The interest rate turns out to be anywhere from, now you're sitting down, 27 to 106%. And this information isn't really readily disclosed in their ads or even in the contracts themselves. And as a matter of fact, in some instances, some of these companies have actually required borrowers to take out life insurance policies that name the lenders as the beneficiary of the life insurance. These things are bad. They're having a devastating effect on people. And unfortunately, what's happening is the federal and state regulators aren't quite picking up the ball here. And this is something they're just starting to get into. The Senate's Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions is now looking into this matter, and hopefully we will get some regulation here. But right now, you've got to be very, very careful. If you have a pension and you do need some money, it's tough getting a loan because sometimes banks won't even count your pension money as income. But be very, very careful of any of these ads you may see, even if it's a legitimate newspaper, even if it's an ad on a legitimate website that tell you that they're going to give you an advance. Most of these, unfortunately, are scams, and you've got to be careful.
Thank you very much, Steve Wiseman, Pension Advance Scam. Very interesting indeed. Check out scamaside.com. It's a great website that Steve has put together and operates for the public good. And check out the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent. I'm Michael Harrison. Thank you, Beverly Santinello on the front line, our producer, putting this all together. Of course, a huge gratitude to the hard work of Carol Marks, the founder of the program and its star. And, of course, we thank, as I mentioned, Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey team. And I'm Michael Harrison. On behalf of all of us, I invite you, our listeners, to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for Bronx.